Welcome to Energy Matters, exploring awakening to your authentic self and finding purpose through mind, body, and soul. With your hosts, Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com.
Hey, Energy Matters listeners, welcome back to another episode. I'm David Gandelman, and I am here with my co-host, Cody Edner. Hey, Cody.
Hey, David.
And Cody, it's awesome to have you. And Cody just got a new tattoo on his lower back. He's gonna show it to us right now. If you're listening to this, you can go on YouTube to the Energy Matters channel. And that was my subtle way.
I have been thinking about getting a tattoo, but not on my lower back.
Oh, okay. What is it going to be?
I don't know yet. You know.
I feel like you should get a leprechaun on your chest.
That would be good. That would be all right. Yeah. A little magic.
So if you want to be part of the magic, energymatterspodcast.com. We have a free course on there called Awakening to Your Spiritual Abilities. It's a 30-minute class Cody and I did. If you haven't gotten in there yet, to check it out. And we also have our Awakening to Energy 4-week course that we taught that's available by download. So if you want to jump into that and our intuitive training and
with our intuitive training, you get to meet each of us, because if you get involved with that, we will get involved with you.
What do you mean by that?
you get a session with each of us for some guidance and coaching on how to further intuitive development.
Yeah. Okay, so if you do the 3-month intuitive training course by download, then we'll meet with you each once. Yeah, let's do that. And also, if you I have a bunch of other free stuff on davidgandelman.com as well, if you're wanting to let go of some anxiety, work through a little heart ache energy, all sorts of stuff there. We've got a very special guest today, Dr. John Amaral. He is an energy worker and a chiropractor, but not just any chiropractor. He's the chiropractor for Tony Robbins. You may have heard of him. He also works with celebrities, CEOs, high performance athletes, and entrepreneurs. They literally fly him out to work with them. He was telling us about some actresses that he works with. And he's one of those guys that, he also works with a whole number of billionaires. He's just one of those guys that is in the upper echelons of helping very high performance people be healthy. And he's got quite the story, doesn't he, Cody? I mean, and just his breadth of knowledge of the healing modalities and of the subtle bodies and of quantum mechanics and of liquid crystalline matrices. we nerd out.
We did. We definitely did.
Yeah, on some pretty deep stuff. And he's got some great advice for us along the way as well. So, get ready, buckle up. Welcome back to another episode, and we are going to jump in with Dr. John Amaral.
Hey, Energy Matters listeners, welcome back to another episode. I am here with my co-host, David, as always.
Hello, hello.
It's been quite a week. David's been on 4 podcasts this week. So
that's right.
He's been busy. He's living the LA life.
I have burned bridges all over the city this week.
I'm stuck out here in Colorado, so, you know, not as much going on. So we are very excited today for the conversation we're about to have with our guest, Dr. John Amaral. Hello and welcome.
Hi, you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you.
I think we have a kindred spirit here, because we are all long-time energy workers, and this is like our passion and our geek out space. It's like energy. Oh my god. So, you know, as I was preparing for this podcast and kind of looking at your work, John, one of the things that stood out to me was that your work is founded in chiropractic, and the kind of the energy work aspect of it, as well as the physical work aspect of it. And I've been an energy worker for about, I think, 35 years now. And I got into it more from, like, I had a little spiritual awakening type thing, you know, in my teens and into my early 20s. But one of the things of kind of my history is that my great grandfather was a chiropractor, and he became a chiropractor like I never even met him, because he would have become a chiropractor in like the early 1900s, late 1800s. He woke up one morning, he was like a carpenter, but he woke up one morning and he had half of his face was paralyzed.
Oh, wow.
And he went to a chiropractor, and with one or two adjustments, it corrected it. And that healing fascinated him so much that he, I think he moved to Ogden. Is that where one of the, I'm not sure which school he went to, but he moved, you know, to the school and learned chiropractic. And then because he was also a carpenter, he developed all these kinds of different table things to help, you know, with the hips and drop things and all this stuff. So wow. That's kind of the story in my family. It's like, you know, my great grandfather was kind of this innovator in healing and energy work. And then that's been my whole life. Like I've only maybe worked outside of energy work 2 years of my life, and the rest I've always done energy work and healing. But I'd love to hear your story about how you got into chiropractic or how you got into energy awareness and energy work.
Well, that's cool that, you know, to hear that your great grandfather was a chiropractor, and that he was actually then would have been practicing around the time when Dee Dee Palmer and his son BJ were still alive.
Right.
The founder developer, it was 1895 that chiropractic was coined and he began practicing. And Dee Dee Palmer was a really interesting individual because he was this magnetic sort of vibrational healer. And he, you know, he was writing about how everything was oscillating and vibrating, and there was a universal consciousness and an innate wisdom or innate consciousness of the body. And it was the union of those two that would really create, you know, an evolved human being. And he was a very sophisticated before a lot of the science was even in place to support it. But my you know, roots of how I got started in this really had nothing. I had never been to a chiropractor. I went to chiropractic college. I had never been to a chiropractor. I'd never had any healing work. I'd never had a massage even. And I signed up for chiropractic college, and I had my first chiropractic experience while I was already in chiropractic college. So the calling that, you know, got me there was not really this like, elevated, like I feel like I have healing, you know, capabilities or that, some like, you know, family member was a healer or something. None of that applied to me. I wanted to be a graphic designer and fine artist. And I took an anatomy course that was, at the local college that I was at in order to, better my skills at drawing and painting the human figure. And I took the pre-med anatomy course because I was able to get in. A friend of mine, his mom was in the admissions department and helped me get into whatever class, you know, was a kind of a hookup. So I was able to get into this pre-med anatomy course it was a very desired class for pre-med students. And I'm taking the course and I'm like acing the course. I had a knack for it. I understood. I got it. And the guy that was teaching the course was like, John, what are you doing? You know, well, have you ever thought about going into something in the health field? And he was a retired chiropractor who was teaching this course. He said, have you ever thought about something like chiropractic? You knew? And I said, no, I haven't, but I'll take a look. And then I was training martial arts with someone at the time, and the guy was going into chiropractic college. And he said, John, what are you doing? And you're going, you know, you're an artist. What are you going to do with your life? You know, he's like, you should be a chiropractor. So these two guys at around the same time, both just influencing me to check it out, I got the information, and I said, well, yeah, this seems cool. I'll work with athletes. I'll work with, you know, the human body. That sounds great. And I just signed up. You know, and there I was, you know, in chiropractic college. I had no idea about the philosophy of chiropractic. I had no idea about healing. I had no idea about my own inner work, my own inner emotions, my own inner world at all. I was very disconnected at the time. And I ended up meeting my wife in prerequisites. Her dad was a medical doctor. Her mom was a nurse. She came from the East Coast, and she had a very powerful experience with a chiropractor, a very powerful healing. And she was like, I need to do this. I need to So she left. She was going to go to law school. She had graduated from Syracuse. She completely changed her whole life to go to chiropractic college because of the experience. Then she introduced me to this work and a method that I started to practice and I had massive changes in all these areas of my life and like awakening and healing through this modality. And so she was my first, she was the one that led me to like the healing side of things. Probably without meeting her, I who knows, but you know, in an alternate universe, I'm still going and I'm working with just athletes somewhere in a very mechanical way and not connected. But it turned out a different way.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and John, I've heard you tell a little bit more about this story before, and how when you were younger, you would, I think, correct me if I'm getting the word wrong, but somatize your experience. So you would like take whatever was going on in your head, and then it would be borne out in some kind of illness in your body.
Yeah, I had
a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, somatic awareness is the ability to like articulate, sense, experience a physical experience of an emotion of a quality of feeling. And when you have low somatic awareness, and in the most clinical form of it's called alexithymia, it's the inability to experience or express what you're feeling inside. I would say I pretty much had that. It was, you know, I had very severe asthma. I was on inhalers for years. I had eczema all over my body that was very intense, where I'd itch it until it bled. And I had cortisone creams, and, you know, I was treated with a lot of, you know, cortisone topical creams and systemic. And then I also had allergies, very severe allergies. So I was having reactions to the environment, getting hives all over my body, reactions to cold, reactions to grasses and pollens. And so I was on some experimental medications. I would go in every week and get injections for trying to kind of reduce the reaction that my body was having. So what was really going on is I was a very, very sensitive human. And I had no real outlet for it. I had no real connection to my body. So my body would express the energy through rashes, through reactions, through, you know, inflammatory responses, which is one of the things we, you know, the emotional system has to move that energy somehow. So it will come out as a somatizing the experience so many times. So that was my youth, a lot of physical symptoms, but it was, I really, as I evolved and healed, I recognized that it was, you know, it was the inability to process what I was feeling, what was going on in my life that was showing up as physical symptoms, and all that cleared. So all the eczema, all the allergies, all of the asthma and everything cleared as I started connecting within, and it's gone. So, I mean, and it wasn't like it just got cured. It was that I have other ways to process that information that don't require my body to just freak out.
Did that happen while you were in chiropractic school? Is that where you started to find those answers?
Yeah. And I started to find it through an experience. I met, my wife introduced me to a man named Donnie Epstein, who had developed something called Network Chiropractic at the time. It eventually became Network Spinal Analysis. Now it's called Network Spinal. And that was a method that I worked, you know, I studied and worked with him for decades, and before going off on my own, you know, journey in my own direction, but had a huge impact on me. And it was a very different approach. Rather than trying to manipulate or adjust or try to correct subluxations or misalignments or something of the physical body, it was about the interface, really, that how our energy and our consciousness sort of interact, and that you could put a force into the body in the place of most receptivity, not the place of most tension. And when you go and when you touch a place that's most receptive, it's most open, the brain can really associate and use that force. It's, you're introducing a possibility into a place where there's already a lot of receptivity in the system. And so there's a whole system and a process to that work. And that got me on the direction of going, wow, isn't it interesting that if we stop trying to fix mechanical mechanical challenges and problems, and we really look to see that this is a self-organizing system that's self-aware, if we increase the awareness and then we introduce a new possibility for how the brain and body can pay attention, we can liberate a tremendous amount of energy, increase a tremendous amount of awareness. And at the same time, when you do those two things, you increase energy and you increase awareness, the whole system can reorganize and it can shift and change and things can transform very, very quickly. So that method is what started me on the path. It's where I had the first kind of awakening, and then I started really understanding healing because I had an experience of healing myself. And that was all in chiropractic college. It was in the early 90s.
Okay. So what is the basic energetic philosophy embedded in chiropractic? And it sounds like out of that, this guy's, that method has taken some steps.
Yes.
Maybe with our awareness now of quantum physics, maybe a lot of that initial, I don't know, Palmer maybe had it as insights or intuition. It's been validated and now we're expanding on it. And I mean, it's like an explosion of awareness and information about how energy's working. And
and
I think a lot of that's coming out of physics, but what's that foundational idea? And then your take on it. And it sounds like you've been growing it over the last 20 some odd years. So.
Yeah. And I did study with, different people and I had experiences, mystical experiences where, come out of a family where my dad was a biology, he was a teacher. My mom was a teacher I come out of a science sort of family. And so I've always wanted to know, show me the, proof. I want to know how does this work? And so I'm interested in putting a foundation of science under these, experiences. But I've had experiences where, there were awakening experiences and mystical experiences I had, with, in chiropractic college with someone who showed me basically he was a shaman that just happened to be teaching a course and staying with my next door neighbor who was also in chiropractic college. And he showed me, I basically put my hand, into his leg and into the femur. I mean, he showed me how to that you could suspend the illusion of solid matter structure and go into this non solid form. And it wasn't like, it wasn't like my blood was coming out. It's just that I was pushing into his leg and his whole femur kind of just, it was like clay or dough or something. It's like the structure of that bone is alive and you can interface and interact with the body. What we can consider the body is really consciousness and energy. And it can be suspended, as you interact with it, that it's this solid thing. And so anyway, I had this experience of, wow, your hand can go right through stuff, and that woke me up. I was there in my early 20s. And I had this very altered state experience with that. And then I had all these other experiences. I had experiences in India. I've gone to Machu Picchu in Peru. We've been to Asia. So we've studied with different people. And different healers and different traditions and seeing that all traditions have some aspect of chakra system or subtle bodies. They describe it in different ways, but usually there's 5 to 7, energy, bodies. There's usually 5 to 7 chakras. I mean, in the Vedic traditions, they say there's 72,000 nadis, so everything is basically an interdimensional portal in a way. So to get back to your original question, my understanding of chiropractic and the roots of chiropractic were that, it was really based in tone and vibration. So D.D. Palmer, the developer of chiropractic, talked about tone. He talked about everything is vibrating or oscillating. And when the tone of the system is not kind of coherent or, but he didn't use the word coherent, but when there's dissonance or frenetic, energy, the nervous system, the nerve tissues are stretched or under tension, it's going to alter the tone, he said. And when you alter the tone, you alter the experience and the consciousness, which is true. Now we know it in more of a quantum perspective. It's like everything is oscillating, vibrating, and there's only like 4.6% of the universe that's actually physical matter. And of that physical matter, because the rest is dark energy and dark matter, and those are forms of energy, right? And you guys know this. Of course, I'm preaching to the choir, but I'm sure the listeners are probably pretty aware of this too. But, you know, of that 4.6% of the universe that's actually matter, most, you know, when you go to the subatomic level, then you're going into, it's all energy. So, you know, everything's oscillating, vibrating patterns of energy and information or consciousness awareness, and we're organizing our reality out of that somehow. So I'm interested in that. D.D. Palmer was interested in that. He was looking for a way to remove or any distortion to the natural flow or tone of the system to have it be in harmony, basically.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And I've heard you say, John, that the body is a liquid crystalline matrix.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So if you touch your LCD screen on a TV, I mean, most people, there aren't as many LCD screens now. They've, you know, but an LCD, a true LCD screen, if you touch it, it kind of like ripples. Mm-hmm. You know, you reach out and touch and it kind of send out the ripples. Well, it does that because the liquid crystal display is a semi-solid. It's like it operates both as a like a crystalline lattice. So it's truly a crystalline structure at the microscopic level. But it also has a fluid component where like there can be changes in the configuration of the crystalline lattice, which allows for the different colors. That's how they send electrical current through the LCD display, and it changes when you send electrical current. It changes the orientation of these crystalline structure. And it allows the green, red, you know, the different colors to blue, to whatever the colors are, to show up. And so the body actually, in the more current research, has been found that it operates in the same way. It actually has, if you look at the structure of a quartz crystal, and if you look at the structure of the human body and the collagen fiber network and everything, it has a very similar structure. Research has found that like the water around the cells, it operates like structured water. So it comes into like this liquid crystalline matrix. And so information can travel through that matrix rapidly, like almost instantaneously throughout the whole system. Everything is interconnected through this network of fascia and collagen fibers. It goes into the, you know, it's in the meningeal sheath that covers the central nervous system. It's around the cells and tissues of the body and every organ and system. It's the mechanism through which it's thought, it appears to, that like acupuncture works. It's the meridian system seems to be, moving energy through that fascial network. James Oshman is someone who has done quite a bit of research on Dr. James Oshman, quite a bit of research, and Dr. Maewon Ho, who was a physicist. They both had some amazing research in this area. So if your body's a liquid crystal, really operate, it truly is. We are like we're a crystal. So, and what can you do with a crystal? You can focus, you can charge a crystal, you can use a crystal to, in a way, like store information. Mm-hmm. And so there are wafers right now that are exist already where you can store basically the equivalent of 25,000 iPhones worth of information in a small disk, you know, that is a very small piece of crystal, and you can't lose that information. You can store it for like a million years on there. You know, it's mm-hmm. wild. So the body has that ability to store information, to transmit information, to communicate through not just like biochemical, not just electromagnetic, not just electrical, but also through information transfer through this liquid crystalline network or matrix. And that information can also travel as wave patterns. Mm. It's in essentially one of the ways this is through acoustic wave. So there's actually sound vibration that's below the level of, you know, the human ear is going to be able to hear. But one of the ways the body's communicating is through sound, acoustic wave solitons that are moving through the body. So yes, we're geeking out.
So is that maybe the foundation of a lot of healing that we do is not, we don't actually touch the person, right? So your hand's kind of away and you're sending energy. You're both receiving and sending energy relative to this healing that's happening to this other person. It's like a relationship starts to happen. Hmm. How is that energy transmitted? Do you think that information and energy for healing is transmitted at what level? Maybe multiple levels.
Yeah, I think there are multiple levels going on. There's transfer of information electromagnetically for sure when you're in proximity. I mean, the heart math is just some great research. Mm-hmm. With looking at the, the field of the heart, the electromagnetic field, which the electromagnetic field can be measured about, I think, 4 to 6 feet from the body with instrumentation. So you have a very real effect off the body. Mm-hmm. And so your heart and the field of your heart, which is a torus, you know, it comes out kind of like a donut shape. It goes around through your heart. That field will influence somebody's brain waves. HeartMath has also done this research where they put two people in proximity and the person who's in heart coherence will actually entrain or sync up the other person's brain waves. And this is measured through ECG or EKG and EEG. So you're looking at the person's brain waves and the person's heart and you're looking at how they sync up. And so that's one transfer of information is electromagnetic and you're interacting at this like very kind of physical space, but there's also non-local, you know, information that's happening there. And there's some interesting devices and things that I'm playing around with now that are like working with scalar technology, which is like, this is not, it's like instantaneous. It's not really a transfer of information because it's like, just think about consciousness itself. I mean, consciousness is non-local. So you can't cut open somebody's brain and identify the location where consciousness exists. You can see synapses, you can see biochemical, you know, processes happening, you can see fields of neurons firing off, but that's not consciousness. That's evidence that consciousness is operating in a physical system. Mm-hmm. So when there's work happening, you know, non-locally, like, or healing work, or even as I'm working with someone on a table, a lot of that is happening in my consciousness because I'm observing them through my consciousness, which means I'm affecting, or I'm effectively participating with the possibilities that they can be by observing, which is, again, goes into a quantum realm here, because the observer is not separated in any way, shape, or form from the observed. It's all an interaction. So I'm observing, my consciousness is holding them as either a separate individual that is a certain person going through their journey and they, and I feel like I need to change or fix or do something to them. Or I'm observing a potentiality of all different sort of versions of what they can be in that moment and selecting from my ability to go, what is the highest, best maybe possible version in this moment that I can even view for them and the world all at the same time. And then I'm interacting with that, which opens up massive possibilities. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I did some training in matrix energetics and I don't know if you've ever practiced that, but it sounds really similar.
Yeah. I've read his book and I went, oh yeah, he's doing a lot.
Yeah.
I've read his book and I resonated with so many things that he was talking about. And I said, yeah, that's the way, you know, I'm seeing things in a very similar way. And just thinking of you going back, Cody, to your question, what are the process, what's happening? It's I also look to like people like Rupert Sheldrake, who talks about morphic or morphogenetic fields. And I feel like the morphic or morphogenetic field, which is basically an informational kind of, it's not even a thing, but it's a relationship that kind of that is where a physical system can be influenced by in a way possibility. So how can I don't know if you guys are familiar. Or
I love Rupert Sheldrake's books and his videos and all of his work. I was actually at MIT and they were giving me a tour of the MIT, this one facility where they've invented like tons of amazing cool stuff, including the 3D printer.
Yes.
And I was with this evolutionary biologist who teaches at MIT. And he said to me, I asked him about Rupert Sheldrake and a little bit about this topic. And he said to me, we have no idea why something takes a certain form, like a certain shape, like the information to make your arm look a certain shape, that we don't know why it does that. And that kind of blew me away. Like no clues. Yeah. Like we don't know why. And I said, can it be a morphogenic field? And he's just like, was quiet for a moment. He's like, it's possible.
I mean, Sheldrake definitely got, you know, he's sort of a maverick and he got
his
talk was banned because he pretty much lambasted the you know, scientific community. But he is a legitimate and an amazing scientist in mind. And he, you know, I feel that his theory that like the morphogenic field can be the potentially the organizer of shape and form for like a salamander or any of like, if a salamander can regrow a limb, you know, then what is the organizational matrix somehow it's informing those stem cells, those undifferentiated stem cells, to differentiate? I think we'll accomplish it. I think that we'll be able to grow probably human limbs potentially in our lifetime with the speed of technology. So, I think that we have moved truly into what Nikola Tesla called, you know, the age of energy, the 21st century.
Yeah.
You know, and we, you know, there are devices and technologies coming online right and left for one I'm checking out. It's called Waveform One. It's like developed in collaboration with a homeopath, which is using LED light. And I'm just trying it out. I'm not promoting it or anything. I'm just exploring it for myself. He's saying that he's having success with Lyme because they're putting LED light and carrying a package of frequencies into the system, and then the brain and body and energetic system is working with that to balance out and harmonize. There are things like CyberScan. There are things like Dr. Tennant's biotransducer. There's all this stuff, you know? And so, and yet we have everything that you know, we need. We're the ultimate, you know, supercomputer.
Our consciousness, is the ultimate driver of energy. And I think, like you say, we've moved into a space, I think, of awareness that everything is energy. That's like become much more ubiquitous. When I started doing energy awareness work and meditating like in the early 80s, and I started to teach it, you would gather a group of people and they really didn't have a foundational concept of energy and groundedness and things like that. And nowadays, everybody that I run across has some concept of that. I heard you speak about like three different levels of energetic states, since we're kind of getting in and talking about energy. And one of them was the neutral one. I can't remember the other two. But I think there was like a good way to be in the world. And how do we kind of set our energy perhaps, or kind of achieve some of those energy states? Well, what are they?
So this was a model of describing, you know, energy that I think that really came from Donnie Epstein, you know, a mentor of mine along the way here. And it's kind of looking at the universe from a thermodynamic perspective, from kind of basic, you know, physics, and the second law of thermodynamics is about entropy, right? Mm-hmm. And it's about that things tend to move toward less order and become less ordered over time, and things tend to break down, and energy moves from a place of higher the second law of thermodynamics is that energy moves from a place of higher, you know, like heat goes from higher to lower. So cold air doesn't rush into a room, heat rushes out and is displaced by the cold air. So energy goes from a higher to lower. So, and things tend to break down. That's entropy. Things tend to break down. So When these levels of energy that you talk about, Epstein called them energy rich, energy neutral, and energy poor. And it goes like this. If you have water at room temperature, it's going to be a liquid. It's going to be in a liquid state. It's H2O, but it's in a liquid state. If you raise the temperature to 212 degrees Fahrenheit, it will boil. And at that boiling point, at that particular threshold, it will become vapor rapidly. It's still H2O, but it's in a different physical form. And if you lower that temperature down to 32 degrees Fahrenheit, it will become rapidly, it will begin to freeze. It will become a solid. So it's still H2O in all those states, but when you change the level of energy in the system, you are going to change the material form that it takes. So with that, that's a fact of physics, and the body's like around 70% water. So, you know, we figure there are effects that are happening in our system when we raise energy or lower energy. I mean, literally, you can freeze and get frostbite and die if you go, you know, at too low of a temperature. But just energy is also, you know, we're talking about subtle energy too, not just energy on a heat level. So when you raise energy in the system, you elevate energy, it changes the way you think. It changes the emotions you feel. It changes the behaviors and actions. When you lower the energy level down, you think in a less resourceful way. You feel more lethargic. You feel like you have less, you know, you feel more depressed. You feel like there's less energy that's available to create with. So energy and consciousness has this interesting relationship that I've noticed, and that when somebody is in a very expanded state of consciousness, typically, more energy is elevated in the system as well. And when they drop into a very depressed, lower state of consciousness, their energy is lower too. So there's this like relationship between the two. So I started to really see that rather than work with an individual from the perspective of this is who they are, this is what's going on with them, and let's treat or support them, I actually want to first elevate energy in the system, which is going to shift their own awareness and their consciousness. And then we can have a dialogue or conversation when they're more resourced.
Right.
Because why try to solve a situation from this low energy state and this low level of consciousness when you can rapidly change the very observer who you're interacting with and have a much higher level conversation and a much higher level outcome.
Yeah.
So turn up the heat.
Yeah.
Turn up the heat. You know?
But my sense, John, in the world today is one of the problems we have is so many people are running from a depleted energy state.
Yes.
And one of our big issues, maybe individually and as a society, is that we've been kind of in our heads a lot, and you know, information's everything, but I think now how to manage energy is like our biggest personal and group kind of thing, which is kind of the impetus of our podcast is Energy Matters, is trying to get the word out that, you know, your state of energy is really what matters. That is the thing that matters. And that is the thing that interacts with matter. But I'd love to hear your take on that, because you interact with a lot of high level people and you kind of help them manage energy. And I think everybody needs help managing energy, actually, not just high level people. But I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Low level people too.
Yeah,
people with resources, like rich people, versus just all of us, like all of humanity to take a step.
Yeah, everyone matters, and you know, we're all part of this organism of humanity that's really one thing. And nothing at the same time. It's an interesting paradox. Right. But I agree 100% with you, Cody. I feel like managing energy that should be primary. That's what I attempt to teach people to do. I attempt to do that, you know, well in my own life. And, you know, at times I stretch, you know, I'm not immune to the challenges that we all face with, you know, from everything from circadian rhythms and staying up later and having not quite enough sleep. I know Arianna Huffington went on a big focus on that because she was
sleep like, tour.
Right, right. So just on a
collapsed from it. Yeah.
Just metabolically, you know, we need to have enough energy to fuel the system to, you know, give our mitochondria, you know, enough ATP generation, et cetera. So just on a very biological level, we need to make sure we're putting high quality food into our body, if at all possible, you know, like the best quality nutrition. We need to stay hydrated. We need to get enough sleep. If possible, have a routine of sleep where you're sleeping at a similar hour, et cetera. And we need to exercise our bodies. We know these things. It's not like this is not new information. We know this. So, but you can do all the right stuff. You can be doing all those things and you can still be anxious. You can still be depressed. You can still feel overwhelmed. You can still have physical symptoms. Doing all the right things and being disconnected while you're doing it, because you're doing it not because it's coming from your own awareness, but because it's just what you're supposed to do, can actually not lead to a subjective sense of greater wholeness and wellness. It can keep, you can be totally miserable, and you can be doing a lot of the wrong stuff. You know, you can be eating like not so great. You can be, you know, not getting enough sleep, and you can be, you know, not exercising, and you can actually subjectively be a lot more well than somebody who's doing all the right stuff. So we got kind of, I view it as two different kind of coexisting paradigms or not even paradigms. It's kind of areas to look at. That's the subjective experience of our inner world and the world around us. And then the actual objective measurement of what's actually going on physically. Mm. And I feel like both of those are important, because you can have a Fitbit and you can monitor all your data. And again, you could be disconnected in a way where you're not in sync with or really one with your body. And you can meditate regularly. And I feel like meditation is a very important tool to help us increase awareness and mindfulness. Meditation doesn't necessarily enhance somatic awareness, body sense and feedback. So I think both are important. It's to practice some kind of mindfulness and meditation and increasing awareness and going into a more transcendent state of consciousness. And then also having a connection with the physical experience and interfacing with our body and having a somatic experience, and both coming together, I feel like it liberates a lot of energy, because we're kind of leaving less stones unturned in a way. It's like you're doing a scan and an evaluation of like, am I really connected? Am I really present with this part of me? Or is it like an app that's like sucking energy because I'm not connected to that part of my body? And then there'll be people, I'll have them put their hands on their body and breathe into an area, and I'll say, what are you noticing? And they say, nothing. It feels like, not like I just, you know, I feel my physical body there, but there's no experience of some kind of sensation or vision or quality or sense, and there's no emotional sense. It's just like kind of like a knock on a piece of wood. And so when you start to develop the ability to kind of evaluate and sense and feel the inner world, as you're developing the ability to go beyond and experience the subtle body and the subtle energies, it makes that, to me, is a really beautiful way to manage energy, to manage the energy within your body as physical substance and matter, and manage the energy like around and in the subtle field, as well as all that, you know, the, like eating right, getting enough sleep if possible, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm. John, I wanted to, that was amazing. And I couldn't agree more with all of it. And I've definitely also found, like, even if my sleep rhythms are good or I'm eating well, it doesn't necessarily mean I always just feel amazing on the inside. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Because there are those people who, like, eat bacon until they're 95 and smoke cigarettes and they're just best life ever. Although for me, it doesn't work. Like when I put anything, even like a little poisonous in my body or unhealthy food, like I just have the worst reactions. So I'm not going to be the 95-year-old eating bacon.
You're hypersensitive. Yeah,
I am. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, I'm sure you get this all the time, but working with someone like Tony Robbins and working on, I mean, he's a big dude, and working on his body as a chiropractor and energetically, I'm sure some people listening to this watching would love to hear a little bit about like your interactions with him and why his energy is so different or why he's so good at what he does. Where does he get that reservoir of energy that he shares with the world? What's been your experience with him?
I mean, for, you know, working with Tony for, I guess it's been going on 13 years now. What an incredible human, you know, in that he is so, you know, committed and dedicated to being able to show up and perform at this super high, high level. He's a freak of nature in a way. Like he literally had a, you know, he had a pituitary tumor, when he was younger, which infarcted and, but it put a lot of heat. So there's like, you know, he has like literal, you know, the beginning of giantism, like his body. So he already had a superhuman amount of growth hormone. So he, in a way, his body had, you know, it was perfectly sort of created to be able to repair and heal and stuff really fast. But, but that only gets you so far. And so there's a tremendous amount of preparation that he does. He spends many, many hours before events getting worked on using like, myself, his trainer, Billy Beck, another practitioner, James Bowman, who does kind of fascial body work with him. Master Ko is another energy worker. So there's a whole team of people that are really supporting this man and devices and technologies. And he's using everything from PEMF to cryotherapy to hyperbaric to a bunch of different, you know, energy devices, all these things, you know, so there's an incredible amount of like preparation and thoughtfulness that goes into getting this body into this state and his mind into a state that when he goes on stage, he can like command the kind of, you know, energy that he does. So if people knew the kind of preparation that this man does and the kind of dedication to managing his energy, they would be blown away. It's hard to imagine spending 4 to 6 hours like in preparation to go on stage for 10 hours. Four, five, 6 hours before that is all preparation.
Yeah.
In that period. And then you got to like recover. So every tool and every methodology that is, you know, holistic, natural and use energy, whether it's an LED light bed, whether it's a, I mean, it just goes on and on and on, the amount of different things that he's looking for hacks, you know, and ways to
automate
the system. So, yeah, I would say I play a small role, you know, in that and for sure he you know, there's no like one secret weapon or anything that he has. It's a way of approaching the world where optimizing energy and being able to output a tremendous amount because you're preparing yourself to do it. Voice warm-ups. I mean, the food that goes in, the nutrition that's going in. I mean, like, you know, my buddy, Billy Beck, who's with him all the time and his personal trainer and friend and a good friend of mine, he's muscle testing and he's doing nutrients, constantly checking to see what the system needs. It's like, you know, it is operating this human system at a super, super high level of performance, which very few people would take the time and focus to do. And, and you see the results when that becomes at the forefront. That's how you're going to manage your energy at the very highest level.
There's a lot of intentionality behind that, though.
It's all intentionality. It
starts with that. And he had to start somewhere. Like, in the beginning, I mean, he created an empire without all those people in the beginning, right?
Yes.
I mean, he knew how to found ways to manage his energy, change his state, show up in a certain way.
Yes. That's all him. So I think it shows that a human being, you know, can
tap into something.
Yeah, it's you. The thing is, when you realize that in order to keep doing that and doing it and evolving it, you right. have support, then you choose, you know, what works for you. And I think what I found in working with people in general, and like whether it's, I mean, it's many, many, you know, it's many thousands of people now, like tens of thousands of sessions that I've done over the years, is that the people that are the happiest, healthiest, and most on purpose, I guess, are those that are connected to what works for them, and not the thing that they're supposed to do, but the thing that actually works for them. And mm-hmm. and you got it. And you, the only way you can really know is you got to be connected enough to yourself to actually listen to your body and get the feedback. Like you said, David, you're not going to be the person that eats bacon till you're 90, because you eat a piece of bacon or whatever, and you just, this doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
And you right. listen to that, and then you say, okay, I gotta do something else. And people will sometimes be on a diet that maybe it's the one they're supposed to be on, but it's not really working for their body. And if they're not really connected and listening to their body, they might push through. And I feel like pushing through and not listening to your body and trying to kind of just achieve and make it happen without recognizing what feedback your body's giving you and actually being present to and listening to that is one of the big challenges that the high level kind of high level, you know, what I mean, people that have achieved or
right.
are successful in their areas are facing it, to the point where I'm writing the book called The Achiever's Dilemma, which is all about this. I'm about 3/4 of the way through that book. And it's,
oh, cool.
Is that like the higher you get up in success, there's more and more expectation and that starts to drive. Is that one of the things that people run into?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's more, it's a lot of it is about managing your creation. So a lot of, you know, we create from a place of inspiration and maybe downloading something. We're open, we're activating, we're in a state of a eureka moment, you know, where your higher brain is switched on, your prefrontal cortex, you know, the frontal part of the brain is lit up, you're getting downloads of information, you're feeling alive and creative and open. And then later down the road, when you're managing that creation, you've got employees, people working for you, you've got a tight schedule, there's not enough sleep, it's harder to eat, you know, that really great diet, you're maybe not drinking enough water, you're stressed about all the different pieces and parts moving, about things falling through the cracks, we're going to find a new assistant, this person's not, you know, all these things that you're managing, the body can be in a fight or flight state. Right now you're not in a creative, like open expanded mode. And then you're trying to like get a little meditation in, maybe you're trying to get mm-hmm. a little, you're managing all these things, and it's not really coming from a place of connection. And so I feel like that's one of the big challenges I see a lot. Is that people's lives get bigger and they get, there's like more responsibility, there's more stuff you're having to deal with. And the practice of connection mm-hmm. and being really with, and actually not just connection, but like the recognition that everything's cyclical and that it's like a sine wave, there's peaks and troughs, and that the troughs of non-doing are as critical as the doing and output. I think those are some of the challenges that achievers and creators and artists and creatives and stuff face. You got to like actually value the non-doing and meditation is a phenomenal.
I definitely have that.
Yeah.
I think we all have it. You know, we all have, it's like, I've worked in behind the scenes with enough people that are super, super performers, like top entertainers, athletes in the world and stuff. And like, everyone's dealing with this. Everyone is dealing. Nobody's immune. Like, you know, everybody has to remember to pay attention and connect and not just try to push through and get to the next level without valuing and honoring and just being with where you are right now, which could be like feeling overwhelmed. It could be feeling like you could have the most abundant flow going, which is like one client I just worked with, is a very, very famous actress. And it was like, she's got this huge company that she runs and all these people, you know, hundreds of employees and stuff, and everyone, it's and everything's blowing up and it's amazing. And but at the same time, she was just like, oh my God, like it's all too much, you know? Mm-hmm. And just to be able to acknowledge and say that, state that, express it, connect to that, feel the emotion of it, can liberate so much energy. And then you're like, okay, I felt that. All right, next, I got this. But you first have to go and into the place sometimes of you have to value all the parts of you that are happening.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because a lot of times when we talk about meditation or being connected, people's mind is kind of goes to getting to a place where everything's perfect versus acknowledging what's real, what's really yes. there, and then start from there, right? So sometimes we go inward for meditation, or what David and I would teach people about connection is coming into a place of, say, energy awareness. And the goal of that isn't to fix everything right off. It's to see where everything is. It's to truly deepen that self-awareness of what is real. And part of that's, what am I really feeling? You know, there's more to it than that. But anyway, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, I think that is, I 100% agree that there's like an inventory taking or kind of a discovery that you have to do a scan. I mean, when you boot up your computer, it does a scan, right? It's not doing something to do an activity at that point. It's just like an inventory that's being taken of like, what's the state of the system. And just doing that inventory in and of itself is a transformation, because awareness in and of itself is transformational.
Right.
So I think we have the ability to,
we lost David here for a minute, but keep going. He'll be back in.
Yeah. I think we have the ability to, change the very nature of the observer, in a way. We have the ability to shift what we're able to observe by interfacing with the very mechanism through which we're observing, which is the human body. So if we can like interface with this body and actually recognize where I'm connected, where I'm disconnected, bring awareness to the place that's less present, and start to develop a relationship between the parts of us that are open and connected and online, we can, in a way, we can create more wholeness, and then we're observing reality, quote unquote, out there, which isn't really out there. It's in our crotch. Right. We can observe it from a more whole beingness. And that actually is healing, right? That's
yes. I think that the transformation happens oftentimes just from that. I think we underestimate the power of our attention, and we just give it away too freely. There's so many things grabbing for it though. And the power of that place of the observer, or the consciousness that can be aware of its own consciousness, that when we can kind of find that place and look at ourselves and the world from there, that's the foundation of transformation in my mind. I don't, you might have a different way of expressing
that. I resonate very much with the Indian, was a very high being, Ramana Maharshi. Mm-hmm. And I had a mystical experience with him while I was in India. But he's not in this, on this living plane. He's not a living human being right now.
Right.
But his teaching was, you know, asking the question, who am I? And then to whom, and then he would ask, you know, to whom does the question even arise from? So there has to be some observer that's asking, who am I? So then he kept going out, and he'd go, well, who's asking the question, who am I? And you'd ask it again, well, who's asking that question too? So you, in a way, I'm speaking to what you were just saying. It's
yes.
The observer observing itself and then observing itself until finally you get to some cosmic consciousness, you know, where there's no more you at all. It just is. Right.
Yeah, pretty cool. I heard a great little story or parable like that the other day, of the seeker who kind of went to, you know, the master and said, who, and his question was, who am I? And so he went kind of up the mountain a little ways and said, who am I? And the master says, oh, that question is too big for me. You have to go farther up the mountain. And about the fourth iteration up the mountain, he gets to the very top, the top level mystic. And he says, who am I? And the mystic answers, who's asking?
is that point?
Yeah, that same kind of teaching.
I hate when spiritual teachers do that to you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you have that similar kind of approach with the like Zen koans, for example, with the sound of one hand clapping. Is kind of, you know, that the participant is part of the, you know, this is what quantum physics began to define with like the double slit experiment and the observer effect, et cetera.
Right.
That, you know, that there isn't just a world that exists, that we're a participant in that.
Yeah. And I think that one of the ways I kind of express that, when we're consciousness is really locked into the world, everything's either or. And when you think of that kind of quantum level of perception, is both and, right? Until you decide, it's like that perception is all that potentiality exists, and which is kind of both and, you could say, until consciousness kind of brings it to a point of I don't know what you call it, collapsing into reality, or
yeah, they call it the collapse of the quantum waveform, basically, of
right,
potentiality into physical, into the experience of a physical form or particle, which was if anybody, you know, hasn't seen this, you can just Google the double slit experiment, and it's the classic experiment that really proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that observation and consciousness has an effect on physical reality.
Right, for sure.
Amazing. Wow. John, you're an incredible wealth of information. I definitely want to get some body work done from you. I'm sure the line is out the door behind Tony Robbins.
We'll have to connect that, David.
Definitely. I teach at this place called the Den Meditation Studio here in LA. You should come sit sometime.
I would love to.
And for all of those, for everyone listening, all of you listening who are like, where can I find some of John's work? You can actually go to his website. It's johnamaral.com, johnamaral.com. And he's going to be coming out with a book in the fall. We've said it here on the show, so the pressure is on. And John, thank you so, so much for coming and joining us, for sharing your wisdom. Really, you're truly a special soul. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Cody. It's been amazing to talk with you guys. And we can, like you said, we can geek out on this for probably infinite amount of time.
That's all we do all day. We
just hit the tip of the iceberg here. We're going to have you back. Absolutely. Well, John Amaral, everyone, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for listening to Energy Matters. Have an amazing day, and we will see you soon.
See you, everybody.
Bye.
That was Dr. John Amaral, everybody. Just a wealth of knowledge, wisdom, light, incredible share. That was pretty cool, Cody.
That was pretty cool. I love that part where you went into that alternate dimension for a while.
I got jumped off.
Sure, you were gathering some information.
The quantum field just blew me out, man.
Yeah, just sucked you right in.
The wave function collapsed for a moment and my internet went out. So if you want to find John, you can go to his website. I'll just reiterate it one more time, is johnamaral.com. What a cool dude, seriously. And we're doing an outro for this episode because we have an ask. If you enjoyed the podcast, if you get something out of it, if you get a chance, go to iTunes and leave us a rating, maybe a review. That would be amazing. David is really good. Cody's all right. If you could leave a review, that would be so cool. If you want to send us cookies or something, that's fine as well. I'll put Cody's address in the bottom here. And energymatterspodcast.com if you want to jump on our newsletter and get some free stuff. We have a course called Awakening to Your Spiritual Abilities. It's a free class, and then got some trainings on top of that. We'll probably do some live stuff again soon. If you get a newsletter, we'll let you know. We've been talking about it. We're tickling. Cool, everyone.
Close.
Thank you as always for listening. Keep it real. Keep meditating. Keep growing. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, everybody. See you soon.
You've been listening to the Energy Matters podcast with Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or soundcloud.com.